The following program is brought to you by Wake Forest University School of Divinity.
Good morning, everybody. It is awesome to be in North Carolina. I grew up in Brevard, and I have family here. And in fact, two of my cousins and my aunt are here today. I have a sister, a 1975 graduate of Wake Forest, who lives in Hendersonville. So North Carolina is a part of my soul. Wake Forest is a part of my soul. One of my favorite stories is about the time when my sister Lynn and my husband Bernie and I were whitewater rafting down the Nantahala River in the mountains of North Carolina. Any of you been there? Just about everybody. We failed to maneuver our boat properly down this 6-foot drop in the river. Maybe you remember that drop. And we were thrown from the boat. Lynn managed to get out of the river. But Bernie and I found ourselves in the freezing fast rapids heading toward the dangerous Weser Falls, which we had been warned about in the orientation. Now, several people yelled frantically from the riverbank, "Let the river carry you! We'll get you out downriver! We'll drop ropes 1 mile downriver!" I heard their instructions, but I was going to get myself out of that river. So I kept trying to put my feet down to stand up, and every time I would be knocked over by the current, becoming more and more exhausted. I did manage to catch a glimpse of Bernie's head bobbing in the white caps. He looked so serene, like he was actually enjoying the ride. Eventually, I surrendered, leaned back into the river, and let the river carry me, trusting that what I needed would be given in just the right moment. The ropes were dropped, as promised. And later, I asked Bernie how he managed to be such a Zen master while heading toward dangerous falls. He said, "I wasn't paying attention during the orientation. I had no idea we were headed toward dangerous falls." I can't remember a time in my adult life when our nation felt more divided. I can't remember a time in my adult life when it felt that the soul of our nation was more in danger. So the questions I hope we can work with this morning are, how do we become repairers of the breach? How do we surrender, lean back into the river that flows toward justice, and trust that everything we need will be given in just the right moment? Most of you know of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Martin Luther King Jr. during the Vietnam War, another very divided time in our nation. He wrote, "Building communities that practice understanding, loving kindness, and compassion may be the most important thing we can do for the survival of our world." And Martin Luther King Jr. put it this way, "Our goal is to create a beloved community, and this will require a qualitative change in our souls as well as a quantitative change in our lives. Building beloved, authentic community may be the most effective way we can help create a more just world in which everyone comes to know their life matters. For as Reverend William Barber put it, either all of us matter or none of us matter. So I'd like to name four characteristics of the kinds of communities, particularly faith communities, that are repairers of the breach in these dangerously divided times. And none of this will be new to you. You are living this. But I find it's helpful to be reminded of things from time to time. Years ago, one of the residents of Samaritan Inns, the nonprofit we nurtured in Washington, D.C., invited me to come visit him at his new job. Later, when he walked me to my car, I said, "Jim, people really seem to love you here." And he said, "It doesn't mean anything. They don't know me. They don't even know that I'm a recovering addict, something as core to my survival as that." Too often, church is a place where we present our polished surface selves, when what all of us long for and desperately need is a place to be deeply known and loved in all of our brokenness. If our world is to survive, the kind of communities needed are communities where we bring not only our gifts, but our brokenness, where we are able to invite others to stand with us in our most entrenched and unsavory struggles. In our recovery cafe communities and the Samaritan Inns community, we believe that holding others accountable to who they say they want to become is the most loving thing we can do. I love Pope Francis saying that churches need to be filled hospitals. And I would add, churches need to be filled hospitals with recovery support services, because all of us are recovering from something. And if we are not in active recovery, we are in active denial. Which brings me to the second characteristic of the kinds of communities upon which the survival of our world depends. And you know this. I see that you know this. We must build communities that cross racial, socioeconomic, political, religious, and other barriers. We must build authentic relationships with people whose life experiences are radically different from our own until their sufferings become our sufferings and their joys our joys. Building communities across these divides is sometimes exasperating, exhausting, and exhilarating. My dad was a 1944 graduate of Wake Forest. Once, after he visited New Creation Community in Seattle, I asked him what he thought about my little church. He responded, "Well, most churches have their share of odd people." He said, "But your church has more than your share of odd people." In 1999, during the very violent last year of apartheid, our DC faith community spent some time in South Africa with the Joweto community, The Joeto community was made up of a handful of whites from Johannesburg and a handful of blacks from Soweto who lived together on a farm in defiance of their country's segregation laws. One of the members of the community explained to me, South Africa has lots of activists who work tirelessly for justice and to end apartheid, but most of them do not have one single authentic relationship that crosses a racial or socioeconomic barrier. Real relationships are what change us and ultimately change our surrounding world. Is it possible and more comfortable for us to live our lives around people whose race, religion, sexual orientation, socioeconomic realities are similar to our own? Of course. Of course it is. But homogeneous communities are not as likely to be transformative communities. And what the world needs now are communities that literally transform us so that we might transform the larger culture. In 1993, Samaritan Inns purchased another old, rundown apartment building to be transformed into our second drug and alcohol-free housing community. We had obtained all the appropriate construction permits, and construction was well underway when city officials rolled onto our property and shut down construction. What we soon discovered was that we had not violated any city codes, but rather the neighbors had put so much pressure on the city officials to keep the men and women we served out of their neighborhood that the city had simply caved under the pressure. To make a long 4-year story short, Samaritan Inns ended up suing the District of Columbia for violation of the fair housing laws of the Civil Rights Amendment. The case ended up in federal court in a 13-day trial, and at the end, the judge ruled that the District of Columbia had, in fact, acted in gross violation of the fair housing laws and had knowingly discriminated against the women and men Samaritan Inns served. We resumed construction and opened a 42-unit beautiful apartment building. But it's important to note that we did not wake up one morning and decide we wanted to spend the next 4 years embroiled in legal battles. Our willingness to step into that fight for those being discriminated against grew out of a call to be in relationship with those being discriminated against. If we truly are growing in love with those who are suffering at the hands of unjust systems, if that love is deep enough and authentic enough, then finding ourselves opposing unjust systems will follow as naturally as the morning follows the night. I love what Dietrich Bonhoeffer says. He says, the person who loves their vision of community will ultimately destroy community. But the person who loves the people around them will create community. Which brings me to the third characteristic of the kinds of communities desperately needed in these dangerously divided times. We need communities where there is not only proximity to and relationship with those suffering injustices and indignities, we need to examine honestly the unconscious narratives deeply ingrained in ourselves that perpetuate these injustices. And we need, along with those who are suffering these injustices, we need to create new narratives. We as a society tend to blame the poor for their poverty, to blame the mentally ill for their anguish, to blame those who suffer at the hands of unjust systems like our criminal justice system for their outrage. And this is often an unconscious blaming rooted in unconscious narratives that some lives are more valuable than others, or that everyone gets what they deserve. These narratives are dangerous to our souls and the soul of our nation, because they not only allow us to blame those who suffer under unjust systems, but they allow us to take personal credit for whatever privilege has automatically come our way. And if we're here today, we're privileged. We're privileged to be a part of this learning community. These narratives lead to the denial of the oneness of the human family. And we deny the oneness of the human family at our own peril. We must create new narratives. Narratives in which all lives are valued equally. Narratives in which the suffering of some is the concern of all. Narratives in which we acknowledge that we cannot become all we were created to be when some have little or no possibility of becoming all they were created to be. Which brings me to the fourth and final characteristic I wanted to mention. St. Francis said, "Proclaim the love of God with every breath, but only when absolutely necessary, use words." This may be blasphemous to say at a divinity school, but I don't think it's helpful for us to talk so much about God's love. What is needed in these dangerously divided times are communities in which we experience God's love. We need communities in which we are held to spiritual practices like prayer and meditation that keep us deeply rooted in the vastness of God's love. Only then can we infuse the surrounding culture with that vastness. There's some people here today who loved Gordon Cosby, the co-founder of Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C., who were friends of his and who loved him as I did love him. And one of the times that I got the word that he was near the end of his life, I flew from Seattle to D.C., and when I got there, I said, "Gordon," I asked him the question I always asked him every time I was with him. I said, "Gordon, tell me what you know now, what you know more deeply now than you did before." Because, you know, we don't learn a lot of new things at a certain point in life. We just take it in a little more deeply. And he said in this very weak voice, "It's so fast. The realm of God, the realm of love, it's more vast than I ever imagined." We need to hold each other to a fortified daily prayer practice that takes us deeper than dualistic thoughts. Dualistic thinking keeps us dangerously divided. We need a prayer practice that roots us in that vastness. If we want our doing to flow from that vastness, we must make showing up day in and day out our primary work. Showing up in prayer, our primary work. For unless our doing flows from the depths of that vastness in us, it will have limited power to heal and transform. If we are to be repairers of the breach in these divided times, if we are to make a qualitative and quantitative difference in the lives we touch, we must allow transforming, reconciling love to flow through us, in spite of us. We must practice leaning back into that river that flows toward justice, allowing ourselves to be carried to places and maybe into relationships we otherwise would not choose to go. And we must build communities that are like springs whose waters never fail. Thank you so much for listening.